WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. The election officials prepare for recounts in several House of Delegates races, and the outcome will determine which party has the majority next year. Invisibilia producer Lulu Miller trains her eye on the history of eugenics in Virginia, and many say the teacher shortage in Virginia is now a crisis. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, December 6th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College. When you earn a two-year associate degree, transferring to a four-year college is possible through their guaranteed transfer agreement programs. More information at brcc.edu.
Election officials in several jurisdictions are preparing for recounts and tight races for the House of Delegates, but as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, the recount in Newport News is one that might actually change the outcome of the election.
Republican incumbent David Yancey has represented Newport News in the House of Delegates since he was first elected in 2011. This year, he ended up with a 10-vote margin of victory against Democrat Shelley Simons, who says her campaign to win the seat is not over.
It is very stressful. I do feel like I have the weight of the Virginia House of Delegates on my shoulders, but we just think there's a lot at stake here.
While it's true that recounts rarely change the results of an election, Quentin Kidd of Christopher Newport University says this election might be different because this year is the first time many voters have seen paper ballots in 20 years, and there's lots of examples of how they could have done the wrong thing.
Somebody put a circle around the name as opposed to marking in the oval, or somebody put a circle around the oval, or they put an X over the oval, or they put a check mark by the name.
Those paper ballots will be examined to see if the intent of the voter is clear, even if the machine didn't record a vote. Through a spokesman, Delegate Yancey declined to comment, and a spokesman for House Republican leader Kirk Cox did not want to speak on the air about the recount, but issued a written statement saying Republicans are committed to making sure all votes lawfully cast are counted. I'm Michael Pope.
One issue that's on the agenda for the upcoming General Assembly session is dealing with decades of pollution, a problem that could potentially divide Democrats, and Michael Pope has that report.
Virginia has a legacy of pollution, decades of coal ash dumped into ponds to prevent it from blowing away. It's the byproduct of burning a fossil fuel to generate electricity. Now, a new report says the cost of cleaning up all those coal ash ponds could be anywhere from $500 million to $8 billion. Democratic State Senator Scott Sorovel says he's worried about what might happen if lawmakers lift a rate freeze that was imposed on Dominion Energy back in 2015.
Dominion would have the ability to potentially pass through the costs of coal ash cleanup, some or all of the costs, to consumers. And so undoing the rate cap, which there's been a lot of talk about, could potentially expose consumers to significant rate increases relating to this coal ash cleanup.
Democratic State Senator Jennifer Wexton says Dominion should pass along its costs to consumers, but it should also share the profits.
If it's a reasonable cost they're doing business, then it's right for them to be able to pass that on to ratepayers. But the bottom line is that doesn't necessarily translate to an increase in a ratepayer's bill because Dominion has been making such high profits.
Lawmakers are expected to take up the issue of cleaning up all that coal ash and the rate freeze when they meet in Richmond next month. I'm Michael Pope.
Lulu Miller, former Radiolab producer and co-founder and co-host of Invisibilia on NPR, is now a fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities to write her book, Why Fish Don't Exist, looking at how we categorize the world. Virginia performed the second highest number of forced sterilizations in the country, and a chapter in her book focuses on the not-so-old practice of eugenics. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini reports.
In the 20th century, eugenics included the forced sterilization of people deemed unfit by the state, which could mean mental illness, but also promiscuity, homosexuality, or even swearing. It was legalized after a Supreme Court ruling following a case in Virginia in the 1930s and has never been overturned since. Lulu Miller recounts how Mark Bold, while he was a law student at Liberty University, started asking questions about this law.
And what everybody told him was that it was actually technically in this weird purgatory where it's legal at the constitutional level, never been overturned, but on the state-by-state basis, every single state had repealed it. So you couldn't really get sterilized because if it's not legal at your state, you know.
But he dug further, and then he saw it wasn't really dead, like in West Virginia, for instance. Note that this happened in 2010.
He wondered if that might be one of these weird arcane laws that no one actually obeys. So he decided that he would call the circuit clerk's office in Charleston, West Virginia. And he pretended, he invented a fictional daughter who was 22 years old, so above the age of 21. And he imagined that she was promiscuous and that she had intellectual disabilities. And he took a deep breath and he called them up and he said he was the father wanting to get her sterilized.
The clerk on the other end of the phone said that he just had to file a motion for sterilization and that the judge would most likely agree to it because, in her words, they know it needs to be done.
He was just shocked and chilled by her tone, just how regular it was.
Mark Bold now runs the Justice for Sterilization Victims Project. Today, many victims are still living. The state of Virginia officially apologized to the victims in 2002, and in 2015, the General Assembly set aside $25,000 for each of them. For WMRA News, I'm Marguerite Gallerini.
Some experts say the teacher shortage in Virginia is now a crisis, and not only is there a downward trend in enrollment in teaching curriculums overall, but the lack of African Americans in that field is even more alarming at a time when diversity in classrooms is increasingly important. Marguerite has this overview.
Crowded classrooms and less one-on-one attention for students, overworked teachers who also have to serve as social workers and psychologists, plus mountains of paperwork. The situation in Virginia schools has gotten worse.
I think we're approaching what we would call crisis proportions.
Stephen Staples is the state superintendent of public instruction at the Virginia Department of Education.
As of last year, there were over 1,000 vacant positions in October of the school year when obviously students were already back in school. So that's a pretty serious problem, I think, for all school divisions.
Mathematics, special education, and science are the areas with the most need. But the problem is reaching across the entire curriculum spectrum. That includes teaching jobs in elementary schools, which used to be the easier positions to fill. Part of the problem is a shrinking pool of teaching students in the pipeline.
To make problems worse, since 2008, there's been a drop of 30% in the number of college students enrolling in teacher preparation programs in the Commonwealth.
That's Jim Livingston, president of the Virginia Education Association.
What's happening is our teacher pipeline is literally drying up at a time when we are seeing a spike in retirements.
Everyone agrees on a number of factors. There is pay.
Currently, at the end of last year, Virginia now ranks 32nd in average teacher salary, almost $8,000 behind the national average.
There's the cost of training.
Many universities ended up moving to a five-year program where students would need to stay to get a master's in order to get licensed, not what had previously been an undergraduate. And what we're hearing from some colleges and universities is that kids were willing to stay and get a four-year degree and come out and teach, but that fifth year was costly, and they thought that impacted it.
Also, the profession has lost respect over the years.
I can talk with older mentors in the community who can tell me stories about when they were growing up, teachers were kind of on the same level as doctors and lawyers, and now teaching doesn't get that same respect.
That's Tamara Diaz. A former Spanish teacher, she is now the executive director of African American Teaching Fellows, an organization in Charlottesville working to develop and retain African American teachers to support the schools in Albemarle County and Charlottesville City. She mentions another factor, the high test requirements to become a teacher in Virginia.
I've had colleagues that wanted to be teachers and are now teachers in North Carolina or they're teachers in Maryland because of one test or one score. I also have teachers who I'm friends with in Virginia who took a test four times. And so you're thinking about paying $100+ four times just to become a teacher in a field where you already don't make a lot of money.
House Delegate David Toscano says he is well aware of the issue.
In this next budget, I think the governor will have more money for teachers, and I'm going to be fully supportive of that. And we'll try to be working on some new regulations that'll make it easier for teachers to want to stay in the profession. We can pass some laws to do that, and we can pass some budgetary amendments that will change the salary schedule for teachers.
But there's something else. Parallel to the general trend, African American students are even less likely to enroll in teacher preparation programs.
I have other students who would say, I'm a first-generation college student, and I have to make it, and I have to be able to come back and help my family. I can't help my family on a teaching salary.
According to the Virginia Department of Education, nearly half of students in public Virginia schools are minority students, while only 16% of teachers are non-white. In Albemarle County, a third of the student body is non-white, but only 8% of their teachers are non-white. And Diaz says that's important.
For the nation to be so diverse, for this to be such a diverse community, and to have students say that I've never had a teacher who looks like me, that is impactful.
So what can be done? Statewide measures could encourage more student teachers, whether it be in the form of grants, by taking down some barriers to licensure through loan forgiveness, or reverting to an undergraduate degree.
I think you'll see some of those percolating through policy decisions, either on the General Assembly side or the State Board of Education side over the next few months.
As for teachers of color, the Virginia Department of Education partnered with the Virginia Education Association to set up a Virginia Minority Educator Recruitment Summit back in February. Another one is planned for the spring.
We actually offered six of our fellows a chance. We took them down to Richmond for the Teachers of Color Summit. A lot of our fellows, because we're still trying to increase diversity, they are the only or they're one of two or three teachers of color or African American teachers in their schools. So for them to attend a professional conference where they could meet other teachers of color was a great opportunity. They kind of got to see role models because they saw people who were in their 40s, 50s, 60s and in education. So for them, they could see, this is what I could do in 15 years or 20 years. Here's how I could still impact education.
For WMRA News, I'm Marguerite Gallerini.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Wednesday.